The Bob Murphy Show, episode 29.
There's a tidal wave coming. What you gonna do?
Get ready for another episode of The Bob Murphy Show, the podcast promoting free markets, free minds, and grateful souls. It's your source for commentary and interviews conducted by a Christian and economist. Now here's your host, Bob Murphy.
Welcome everyone to another episode of The Bob Murphy Show. This particular episode, I'm going to try to keep it on the shorter side. I have an itch I need to scratch. It was provoked most recently by an article in The Atlantic, which we'll get to in a minute. And I thought, geez, is there enough content here for a whole episode? I realized they don't always have to be an hour and 15 minutes talking about the intricacies of capital interest theory. We can have some fun sometimes. If I want to just spout off, I can do it. Before I forget, let me mention, I think you guys will get this in time to take action if you so desire. On Friday, April 26th, we're in 2019 right now, I'm going to be speaking at Connecticut College on the topic of the economics of climate change, right? So I'll give my views as to why it's not true that, oh my gosh, the governments of the world need to take drastic action or else we're all dead. And it's not merely deontological nitpicking and saying, well, we're all going to die, but at least we'll be pure and not have violated the non-aggression principle. I'll go through and give some pretty standard economic analysis drawing on the so-called consensus as published and codified in things like the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change and reports issued by the Obama administration. So I think if you haven't ever heard me talk about this stuff or read my writings for places like the Institute for Energy Research, you might be surprised that I hope you're all sitting down for this. It is not true when people say, like Ocasio-Cortez, this is what all the science says. Government policy needs to be X, Y, and Z, or else we're all dead. Yes, natural scientists make some claims, and people can argue about that, but I am stipulating all that for the sake of argument. What do the actual underlying economics have to say? And in fact, the recent Nobel laureate, William Nordhaus, his own work shows that, for example, trying to hit a 2 degrees Celsius target, let alone a 1.5C ceiling in terms of total warming, is ludicrous. Okay, so that's what I'll be doing on April 26th, again at Connecticut College. And then on Monday, April 29th, I will be speaking at Lock Haven University, this time on healthcare economics. And you say, wow, that's a lot of stuff you talk about, Bob. It is. It's because I am the hardest working economist in show business. Someone recently introduced me as the hardest working economist or something like that. It was good stuff. Okay, so what we're talking about today, as the title of the episode indicates, is this phrase people use a lot, like, oh, taken out of context. And a lot of times people just mean, I don't like what your opinion of the statement was. Like, that's really all it means. And so I want to push back on that. And here, you know, there's nothing too profound here, but sometimes my favorite episodes when I'm listening to other podcasts is when people just say the obvious that I haven't heard anyone actually spell out before. So that's the role I'm doing here. I'm going to be the change I want to see in the podcasting universe. I have not seen enough people, if any, point this out, all right? That, again, the phrase or variance of it of, oh, those remarks were taken out of context, to then denigrate the person who's criticizing something that somebody else said. And a lot of times, like I say, that's just used incorrectly. So the specific thing that set me off was this Connor Friedersdorf article in The Atlantic. The title is Ilhan Omar Falls Victim to the Outrage Exhibitionists. And the subtitle is, in attacking the representative over a small, unintentional slight, Donald Trump and the populist right are displaying bad faith. By the way, that's another phrase that gets me mad, this bad faith. Again, I think in practice, all that really means is I don't like these people and what their arguments are. But we'll save that for another podcast episode, perhaps. So let me say at the outset here, my point in this episode is not to criticize Omar's remarks. All right, I think my view will come through on that. But I really, especially on the heels of Easter, I'm recording this the Monday after Easter and what happened in Sri Lanka and so forth. Look, I do not want to further stoke any hostility among various religious faiths. And so here, I'm not trying to set this up as a Christian versus Muslim worldview kind of thing. What I'm narrowly focusing on here is that Connor Friersdorf is writing in bad faith, if that's the way you want to talk about, or I would just say more straightforwardly, he's being an idiot. All right. He's using these terms incorrectly. So let me go read you some of this. You'll see where he's coming from. So this is the beginning. When the ideological left engages what is variously denigrated as political correctness, virtue signaling, performative wokeness, or social justice warrior crybullying, many on the right find it easy to spot the flaws in those modes of discourse. But that discernment vanishes when the populist right indulges in the same vices, even as progressives become unusually attuned to their downsides. So again, for the first time in this episode, he's now setting it up, just to make sure you're following the argument. He's saying, typically, it's the ideological left who we're told are the ones who engage in PC talk, the virtue signal, their SJWs, they whine about terminology and how their feelings are hurt, and the populist right, ha-ha, mocks them, you know, grow a pair, you guys, gee whiz, you know, you crybaby soy boys, that sort of thing. But yet, even as the left now has become attuned to that and they're trying to clean up their act, it's the right now that's the real villains when it comes to these traits. And so now he's going to give us an example of what he means. Last month, Representative Ilhan Omar attended a banquet hosted by the Council on American Islamic Relations. So that's CAIR, Council on American Islamic Relations. I think they call it CARE, but I'm not sure. But if I say CARE, that's what I'm talking about. But I don't know if people say it that way. But it's CAIR, all in caps, is the organization, where she delivered remarks for roughly 20 minutes. A major theme was prejudice against Muslims. Here's the truth, she said. For far too long, we have lived with the discomfort of being a second-class citizen. Frankly, I'm tired of it. And every single Muslim in this country should be tired of it. CARE was founded after 9/11 because they recognized that some people did something and that all of us were starting to lose access to our civil liberties. All right, so that's the money quote. That's the thing I'm sure most of you know the broader context. No pun intended, since we're talking about taking things out of context. I'm sure you know the broader context of this is that when she said that, a bunch of people started flipping out, and then Trump even tweeted or retweeted a video playing her oral remarks. You know, that was like the soundtrack, probably with music mixed in, I don't remember. And then showing graphic imagery of what happened on 9/11, right? So showing her describing the events of 9/11 as some people did something, and then, you know, showing what that was. And that's what she's going to describe as some people did something. How outrageous. Okay, so then here's back to Friedersdorf. Omar's meaning was clear. Many Muslims felt collectively blamed for something that was indisputably perpetrated by a tiny fraction of their co-religionists and marshaled new resources to protect their civil rights in response. Da, da, da. Okay. What's funny is even Friedersdorf here says in parentheses, CARE was actually founded in the 1990s but expanded significantly after 9/11. Okay, so in other words, what she said was actually factually wrong also besides being tone deaf. But anyway. And so then I'm not going to document every single time he says it, but just to justify my use of the phrase out of context, he says it at least three times where he says, for example, I'll give you one. He goes, this month, an Australian imam stripped one of her remarks from its context and tweeted, Ilhan Omar mentions 9/11 and does not consider it a terrorist attack on the USA by terrorists. Instead, she refers to it as some people did something. Then she goes on to justify the establishment of a terrorist organization, CAIR, on U.S. soil. Okay, that was very provocative. This imam wasn't merely pointing out that she referred to 9/11 as some people did something, but went and called CARE itself a terrorist organization. He also went too far and said she does not consider it a terrorist attack. Okay, we cannot conclude that from her remarks. Just because she referred to it as some people did something, that doesn't mean she's denying that it was a terrorist attack. Okay, so let's be clear. This particular tweet from this Australian imam is a low blow, right? He's asserting things that you cannot conclude from what she said. However, it's not really stripping it from its context, but Fair enough. And then Representative Dan Crenshaw picked up on that tweet, and Crenshaw said, first member of Congress to ever describe terrorists who killed thousands of Americans on 9/11 as, quote, some people who did something, he wrote. Unbelievable. Okay, so now we're back to Connor Friedersdorf, who just quoted Crenshaw, and he says, and Connor says, what's unbelievable about imperfect extemporaneous speech? Okay, and so here I need to stop. Are you kidding me? We're pretending we don't understand why her referring to 9/11 as some people did something might upset a lot of people, and rightly so. I mean, this, what's unbelievable about it, and to call it imperfect extemporaneous speech? I mean, Friedersdorf calling what she did imperfect extemporaneous speech is about as antiseptic and ludicrous as her referring to 9/11 as some people did something. All right, and so several other points, like I say, he talks about how these critics are taking her remarks, stripping them of context. And so what I want to say is, no, they're not. If you go and read it in context, she's saying exactly what she appears to be saying. All right, and this is the thing that I think a lot of people are missing on this particular controversy, is everyone keeps focusing, or I shouldn't paint so broadly, a lot of the people that I see giving her a qualified defense, they seem to think that the outrage is over the some people, right? And they're saying, no. All she's saying is that it wasn't all Muslims, and so you shouldn't attribute it to all Muslims. She's worried about a backlash against the whole Muslim community. Yeah, right. That's fine. So if she had said some people committed a heinous terrorist act, nobody would have batted an eye. It's not the some people from her statement that's making people flip out. It's the did something. That's what's making people flip out. So it's pointless, as Friedersdorf does here. I'll stop quoting from this because, you know, eventually it'll be on fair use anyway. And I don't want him coming after me legally for quoting too much of his article. But the point is, he spends his time just trying to make you see, no, in context, if you go look at her remarks, you'll see she wasn't explicitly denying that it was a terrorist attack. She wasn't rooting for what happened on 9/11. She was just saying that we shouldn't blame all Muslims for what happened on 9/11. Yeah, right. And again, nobody would have objected if she said words that merely did that, that said, hey, some people committed moral atrocities on 9/11, and the vast majority of Muslims wanted no part in it and condemned it heartily and full-throatedly. If she had said that, again, nobody would have said anything. It's that she referred to what happened on 9/11 as did something, that's the way she described it. And again, if you go, now I confess, I did not like listen to the whole thing. I didn't read the whole thing, but I did click through the links and look at the text of what she said and other news coverage. I did not see anywhere else in that speech where she used language like that, where you would say, oh, okay, yes, she like couldn't get to sleep, you know, at night because that was such a moral outrage, or she uses really strong language to show how badly, you know, she condemns the attack or anything. All right. So again, what people are flipping out about is that she chose those words to describe 9/11. And so it's not at all taking her out of context. That was the context. Yes. She was talking about minimizing the impact on the Muslim community from 9/11. And so what the critics were concerned about is she made it look like there was no big deal that happened. And the real outrage that day was that some Americans might unfairly blame Muslims for it, not that, you know, thousands of people died. Okay, so that's the issue. So you're not stripping it out of context by saying that. That is the context. There was nothing wrong about that in terms of context. Let me say some more stuff on this. I have seen examples where people on the right could fairly be described as hypocrites for all their, you know, normal SJW bashing. I can't come up with a great example right now of what I mean, but I know I have seen, for example, on Twitter, somebody like, let's say, a libertarian leftist retweeting like somebody from like Trump, or I don't know, was it Matt Walsh? You know, somebody of that nature, or Sean Hannity, let's say, and how they reacted to something that the libs did that offended them. And I've seen left libertarians retweet that and go, oh, go get your safe space, you big crybaby, you know, stuff like that. And where I've thought, okay, fair enough, you got him. That's a good zinger. Maybe, for example, stuff like with football players taking a knee, or if somebody does something to desecrate the American flag and then, you know, right wingers flip out about it, or like the Starbucks coffee, the you know, the whole outrage over the Christmas cups or whatever that stuff was. So again, I am not denying what Friedersdorf was trying to say. This was an example of that. Yes, there are cases where the right wing, they have their icons and their magic words and their concepts that you're not allowed to denigrate or impugn in any way, even in a perfectly rational discussion, without them flipping out and, you know, wrapping themselves in the flag and screaming America, apple pie, and motherhood, and, you know, you're a monster because you tread upon my my magic words or whatever. All right, so I get that. And yes, it's particularly hypocritical for people on the right to do that if they're the sort who make fun of college students who need safe spaces and they can't stand to hear someone who disagrees with them or else they go cry to their mom. I get that. All right, so that is a real thing. I'm saying this particular episode is not an example of that. Let me give you an example of what it would mean to take something out of context. And I dwelt on this before in the episode of The God of Social Media Demands Sacrifice. And also I'll link to that in the show notes page here. Remember, you're listening right now to bobmurphyshow.com/29 if you want to see some of these links. But as I pointed out in that previous episode here, I'll give the brief version. If you go to my Wikipedia entry, right, so the Robert P. Murphy entry in Wikipedia, it's funny that from the contents, you would think I was born, I made a bad inflation prediction, I said some stupid stuff about the Bible and evolution, and that's about it. And maybe I wrote some books. That's what you'd think from the outline of my biography on Wikipedia. But here, so in a section entitled Skepticism of Evolution, Defense of Biblical Literalism, it says, in two LRC articles entitled, Well, I'll Be a Monkey's Nephew and More Monkey Business, Murphy expressed skepticism about evolution, asserting that he, quote, can literally prove evolution is false, end quote, by pointing out that human beings act altruistically. Okay, so that is a true statement about what I wrote, but it is entirely taken out of context. Because there, I was quoting a defender of the conventional Darwinian approach, and he said, oh, some people say that evolution is non-falsifiable. No, it isn't. If anybody could give an example of one species acting altruistically by, you know, hurting its own interests in order to help some other species, then, you know, the standard theory of evolution would be disproven. And so I said, okay, what about if I find an example of humans who are trying to develop a virus to wipe out the human race because they don't want us to continue harming the planet? There, I just did it. So I disproved evolution, right? So obviously, I didn't think I just disproved evolution. I was just calling the guy's bluff and saying he doesn't really mean it when he says that, because if I did produce an example, he just would say, oh, that doesn't count. That's not what I meant. All right. Whereas this person who wrote this blurb on me for the Wikipedia entry is leading you, the reader, to believe with that quote from me that I really did think, ha-ha, I just disproved the standard case for evolution, was patting myself on the back and running victory laps. All right. So that would be, but technically what he wrote with that quotation from me, you know, he didn't doctor that it really is a quotation. It's just taken out of context. When you read what I wrote in the broader context, you see, oh no, actually Bob didn't mean at all what this person's leading you to believe that he meant. Okay, so that's what it means to take something out of context. Let me give you another example of something that's not taken out of context. And here I even see people using this phrase to defend Trump. So they're, you know, against the people doing things that are intellectually dishonest. But again, I think they're misusing the phrase. And specifically, I have in mind the whole reaction blowback after the Charlottesville tragedy. And Trump, you know, saying very fine people, right? So lots of people have just now filed it away as a fact of history that Donald Trump called neo-Nazis, quote, very fine people. Krugman has said it at least twice in so many words on his blog saying, or, you know, or op-ed. I don't know if it's a blog post or an op-ed, saying that Donald Trump referred to neo-Nazis and white supremacists as, quote, very fine people in his remarks. And this has just been filed away. So I've seen some people say, no, you're taking Trump's remarks out of context. And I would say, no, you're just lying, all right? This, because it is not true that Donald Trump referred to neo-Nazis as very fine people. if you go and look at the context, you can see he didn't. He explicitly, on more than one occasion in those remarks, within like a 4-minute span total, made it crystal clear that he was not referring to the neo-Nazis and the white supremacists. He was referring to the people who were concerned about the heritage of Confederate war statues. Now, if you want to say, well, those are the same thing, okay, but lots of people don't think they're the same thing. And when even a reporter specifically asked Trump, it said, wait a minute, you're concerned about the, I don't know if she said neo-Nazis or white supremacists, but she said one of those, like, about them being treated unfairly. And Trump said, no, I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about, and then he clarified who he was talking about. Okay, so, I mean, I guess it's a true statement to say they took his remarks out of context, but that's not merely what they did, right? They actually lied about what he said. Right? And so that's a different thing, right? Because Trump did not say the neo-Nazis were very fine people. So to me, to say what was the sin committed there by someone who refers to Trump doing that, I would say it's not, oh, they took his remarks out of context. It's rather that they said something that just wasn't true, right? Again, the distinction, the person who said, Murphy said in his article, quote, I can literally disprove evolution, end quote. There, I did say that, right? So it's not a lie to say that I said that. But again, that was just taken out of context. When you see what point I was making with those words, then you say, oh, wait a minute. The meaning, what we gathered from the person reporting on him in that fashion, was the exact opposite of what Murphy meant. Whereas with the Trump thing, again, it's not that, I mean, to give you a contrived example, it would be like, if you did a movie about somebody who was serving with the SS and then had a change of heart in the last minute, allowed a bunch of people to escape. And then, you know, somebody referring to that person said that, here's one example of a Nazi who did the right thing. And then somebody quoted that and said, so-and-so thinks Nazis did the right thing. That would be taken out of context, even though it wouldn't be an untrue statement. Okay. Whereas with Trump, again, it wasn't merely that you're taking it out of context if you say Trump said neo-Nazis were very fine people. It's that that's not at all what he even said. Another funny thing here about this Friedersdorf article is he tries to, and this is so telling, just to show how ludicrous his case is here. All right, so he wants to, again, he wants to, let me just read a little bit of it first, and then I'll go into this last major point I want to make. Plucking one phrase from a longer speech in order to question her allegiance to this country, because he quoted somebody from Fox who said, you have to wonder if she's an American first. Okay, so now Friedersdorf is responding to that guy. Plucking one phrase from a longer speech in order to question her allegiance to this country, even while failing to mention passages directly relevant to that question that cut in the opposite direction, is exactly the sort of wild, dishonest extrapolation properly seen as political correctness gone wild when done to, say, Jordan Peterson. Okay, so here Friedersdorf again is trying to show, isn't it ironic that the right is totally mischaracterizing what Omar said? And that's the kind of thing they complain about when people do it to, like, Jordan Peterson, their hero. So, I guess it's okay for you guys to take remarks out of context and just to attribute wrong things to people, but it's not okay for the left to do it, huh? How about that? And so now he's going to try to, Friedersdorf, give an example of what a right winger could have said that would be analogous to what Omar said, and then to show how, you know, imagine if the left misrepresented them and treated them unfairly the way that Trump et al. Are treating Omar, and then wouldn't it be clear that Fox News and Jordan Peterson and everybody would flip out, right? So that's what Friedersdorf's going to do. Okay, so you ready? So here's Friedersdorf. Indeed, it is easy to imagine a populist right commentator declaring, and now he's got it in italics, right? So it's not a quote. So here Friedersdorf is making up a statement that some hypothetical populist right commenter might say. Donald Trump supporters are right to mistrust the media. After Charlottesville, we realized that whenever some people somewhere in America do something, we're going to be considered guilty by association. Okay, so that's the end of Friedersdorf making up something that a right winger might say after Charlottesville. And now Friedersdorf is returning to his commentary. There would be clearer, more eloquent ways to convey the intended sentiment, but its meaning would nevertheless be easy to discern. Most on the right would understandably suspect bad faith if that mildly clumsy statement was cast by an opinion journalist as an attempt to minimize the odiousness of neo-Nazis or to diminish the horror of Heather Heyer's murder. Okay, so again, I know without you seeing the written text, you might be getting lost here. And stay with me, folks. This is the last point I want to make on this guy's article. He's trying to get you to see what hypocrites the right-wingers are. The people who complain about Jordan Peterson being taken out of context. And I've done that here on this show where it was in that same episode, actually, the God of Social Media Demands Sacrifice, where I played a clip of what Jordan Peterson said, where he was lamenting that, hey, you know, we're powerless against women, you know, like some woman who's accusing me of being a Nazi and, you know, I can't do anything, right? And so you women need to step in and police that. Cause, you know, with a guy, we could be, I could get physical. Some guy comes into my face, he's calling me out. But, you know, with women, it's forbidden for us to touch women. So it's up to you women to police them. But, you know, normal women are taking their kids to school or they're working on their career or whatever. They don't have time to be policing their crazy sister harpies. He said something like that. All right. Very provocative, sure. But the way I saw people describe that is Jordan Peterson wishes he could beat up women. that's not really even taken out of context. That's just lying. By the way, I should clarify, Paul Krugman's not necessarily lying when he says Donald Trump said neo-Nazis are very fine people. It's conceivable Krugman is just being grossly, irresponsibly ignorant in repeating a falsehood. Right? Lying means Krugman is actively aware that what he's saying is false. And I guess it's conceivable Krugman really thinks Trump said that. I doubt it, but it's possible. Okay. Back to Friedersdorf. So Friedersdorf is trying to show how, yeah, that kind of stuff you complain about when it comes to Jordan Peterson, well, that's what could happen here. So he's trying to, you know, construct a mirror image. Let's take a right winger who might have said something about an event where leftists are very upset about, namely Charlottesville and what happened there to Heather Heyer in particular, that, you know, who was run over by the car. Let's talk about that. And imagine if a right-wing commentator used the same slip of the tongue or inartful prose the way that Omar described 9/11. That's what Friedersdorf's doing here. And so he has this hypothetical right-wing commentator saying, Donald Trump supporters are right to mistrust the media. After Charlottesville, we realized that whenever some people somewhere in America do something, we're going to be considered guilty by association. And then Friedersdorf is saying, yeah, so that's not a great way to talk about Charlottesville, but you can understand what the person meant. And if people bit that person's head off, come on. And I want to say, are you out of your mind, Friedersdorf? Of course, if somebody talked about Charlottesville like that, the left would bite their heads off. And that's not hypothetical. We don't need to be hypothetical. We have Trump talking about Charlottesville, actively condemning the neo-Nazis and the people who are the guy who ran over Heather Heyer. Trump got up there, made it unequivocally clear he was condemning them in very harsh language, then merely said some people, though, not them, but some other ones who were at that rally were very fine people. And people said, oh, Trump calls neo-Nazis very fine. So it's not even in the same zip code, Mr. Friedersdorf. Of course the left is a billion times worse when it comes to something like this. And you're absolutely right. If somebody said what happened at Charlottesville was some people did something, everybody would be flipping out. If it was somebody who had been running for office, he would be asked to step down. So the last thing I'll say on this, just to, you know, inoculate the right way. I mean, with none of this stuff, it doesn't matter. With any of this stuff, it doesn't really matter. You can't use logic or reason. I was when I saw this thing, the story break, and the left was trying to defend her and say, oh, no, you know, she wasn't trying to denigrate 9/11 or anything. I don't understand what the big deal is. I thought one way the right could have handled that was just to play it cool, not overly flip out. And then when the issue of reparations for slavery come up, just to have, you know, a bunch of people like Mitch McConnell and stuff, imagine them tweeting out and saying, well, I don't get this claim for reparations. I mean, some plantation owners a long time ago did some things and now all of a sudden all white people have to pay money. Can you possibly imagine the outrage if he said that? If he referred to slavery as some plantation owners did some things? Can you possibly imagine? the outrage that would pour forth in that scenario. And I really doubt Connors Friedersdorf would step forward to defend Mitch McConnell in that kind of environment. It's a little inartful eloquence, but there's nothing to suggest that he doesn't think slavery is a moral outrage just because he referred to slavery as some people did some things. I mean, this is, I can't even believe we're having this conversation. Maybe that's a good note to end on. Well, thanks everybody for listening. And in the future, if you want to hear some more truisms, stay tuned to The Bob Murphy Show. I will see you next time.
You've just experienced another episode of The Bob Murphy Show, the podcast promoting free markets, free minds, and grateful souls. For more information and to subscribe to this podcast, visit bobmurphyshow.com.